Grandfather William Sawyer.
Ask questions and I give answers, is that
yep.
it?
Yep.
Okay.
How was your childhood growing up?
Well, I was born in the state of Maine, 33. My first memories are my father and my uncle taking me out in the lake, one of the lakes in Maine, Lewiston, Maine. We were with a team of horses and a sleigh during the winter time and cutting ice blocks out. This is what they did in the older days. And in about, this was in 1933, and in 1935, we moved to Canada, where my mother's parents were, which would be your great-grandmother. And then in 1936, we moved to Monroe, Michigan, because this was during the Great Depression, and work was not to be had in either Maine or Canada. My father, your great-grandfather, came to Monroe a year ahead of us, worked in a coal yard. And my mother and I, your great-grandmother, came in 1936, I believe it was.
So Canada was affected by the...
Pardon?
Canada was affected by the Depression, too?
Oh, yes. The whole North American continent was affected by the Depression.
What was... Did you really, during the World War II, what was that like?
During World War II? I can remember it. It was on a Sunday morning, and it came over the radio, President Roosevelt, and I can remember his speech that the Japanese, the Imperial Japanese fleet and aircraft had struck Pearl Harbor. President Roosevelt said it was a day that would live in infamy, and things were rationed that then. I can remember everybody running out on the street and looking up in the air because nobody knew even where Pearl Harbor was. And we thought it was in the, as far as children were concerned anyway, they thought it was in the United States and we were all going to be fine. Remember all of us kids running out into the street, looking in the air, and looking all around.
Was there a lot of people that lived in Monroe at the time?
Monroe consisted, I would say, of approximately, 25,000 people, between 25 and 30 in Monroe proper. What the population is today, I have no idea.
Yeah.
But I do remember during the war that there was a naval training base, and in Carlton they used to land and take off there, steermen, which is bi-wing airplanes, and they also at Monroe Custer Airport, they used to dive bomb. They had a big target in the ground, and it had a, it was like rock put together with concrete, and it was a big circle with a dot in the middle, and these planes used to dive bomb out there, and they would release a bomb that would shoot up a white phosphorus smoke. And all us kids, not knowing any better, and our parents not knowing we were doing it, used to run out over to the airport after the planes left and dig up the unexploded bombs, because they were prized possession for children at that particular time. And when our parents found out that we were doing this, they got naturally very upset with us, and we wouldn't do it again. But still, even some of the bigger boys, they snuck over there and to the airport, and they picked them up. And, but everything was rationed. You couldn't buy tires for your car. Gasoline was rationed. Could only get so many gallons a week. It depended on what they had stickers that went on the windshield. there were A, B, C, and something else. Depend on what kind of a work classification you had, but you were only allowed so many gallons of fuel a week to burn in your car, usually enough to get you back and forth to work, or a lot of the men carpooled. And food was rationed, different types of food. They used to have practice all the time in school. We used to have air raid alerts where sirens would go off and all the children would go down. And I went to the old boys' school in the mill. And all the children went downstairs and they would get underneath tables and they would kneel down with their hands on their, just kneel over down with their heads on their, the floor and their hands over their heads until the all clear siren went off. And a lot of us, the younger kids at the time, thought it was a real air raid. Teachers kept assuring us that it wasn't. It was just practice what to do if we ever was bombed. And I remember one time in the early part of the war that people were very patriotic in those days. They loved America. Anybody went to war, one family took that, helped the other family that had a son, daughter, husband, father in the service. Everybody helped everybody else out, all the neighbors. They were very caring people. And the family lost a loved one in the service, then everybody would go and help them and help take care of them until they could make arrangements for themselves. As children, we played a lot of softball in the fields and football, but we were very interested in the war.
So is there a lot of people from Monroe that are around the neighborhood that went to war? And
yes.
It was in World War II?
Yes, there was quite a few people.
Did Grandma Sawyer work?
Grandpa Sawyer, which would be your great-grandfather, worked at Monroe Auto Equipment Company, which was a shock absorber company in Monroe. But during the war, they made shell casings and bullets for 50-millimeter guns. And Grandpa went to, he worked the, a lot of times he'd work the 4 to 12, 4 in the afternoon to 12 midnight. And other times he would work from midnight to 8 o'clock in the morning. And it was very interesting because normally you look at a factory now at night and you can see lights all inside the factories during the window, through the windows. Well, during World War II, they painted all the windows with black paint so you couldn't see inside. You couldn't see the lights on at all because they were afraid of air raids and the enemy bombers coming over bombing. They wanted to turn off. They didn't want them to see the factories where the factory were in case of bombing. But you couldn't get sugar. Women could not get stockings, nylon stockings, which was a really popular thing. And chewing gum, as kids, we grew up very little chewing gum. And basically, the only chewing gum we had was Wrigley's. And, they had black, what they call blackjack chewing gum, but very seldom we'd ever get hair of it. And a lot of candy bar, candy was all rationed. We couldn't get it. It was all sent overseas to the soldiers. And everybody didn't care about that back in those days because we all wanted their boys to come home again. And unfortunately, many of them didn't. But I can remember one time when they brought a Japanese submarine through Monroe on a trailer that was captured, I believe it was off the west coast, but I'm not, of California, but I'm not sure on that. But I remember thinking of that, that actually the Japanese soldiers, I think it was a two or a two-man submarine, just a small ship, and the soldiers actually lived that way. Towards the end of the war, I remember the Corsair coming to Monroe, Woodall Industries, which was a plant in Monroe off Cuba Drive. They made parts for that particular airplane, and they wanted the people to see that airplane. It flew so low over the house that it was just above the wires itself. It flew so low. Just above the factory. We lived right across from Woodall at the time, the Industries. And I was in school at the time, but my mother said that it was something to really behold to see this airplane fly so low over the wires. And it landed at Custer Airport, and they trucked it in because the wings folded up on those type of aircraft. They were a carrier aircraft, and they trucked it into Monroe so everybody could see it. And I remember I got to see the inside of the airplane. They had a platform so you could stand up and walk over the wing and look inside the airplane. And that was really a thrill for all us boys at that time.
Was it like that one, it was like, how many people could be in it? Was it like just one person plane?
It was a one person plane, yes. The Corsair was a one person aircraft.
Now was that our plane or their plane?
No, that's it. Corsair was a Grumman. Grumman Aircraft Works made it, but it was a U.S. air carrier based airplane, yes.
Oh.
In fact, that particular airplane flew also in the next large war, the Korean War. But one interesting factor that when the war was over, first Germany surrendered, and then the Japanese surrendered. And when they called it VE Day for Victory in Europe, the biggest celebration in downtown Monroe, in fact, all over the world. You wouldn't believe it, and how everybody just turned out, parades and ticker tape and everything. And then when VJ Day, which was Victory in Japan, that was another big parade. Because all during the war, you had to have your lights out completely by certain times. And when the sirens used to go off showing an air raid, that indicating that there were enemy planes coming over, then it was just practice. But all the lights in the whole town and the surrounding area would go out. And they used to have civil defense men that used to come around, and if they saw a light on in their house, they would knock on your door and tell you to turn off the light during the air raids.
Why did you have to turn the lights off like at night, like the curfew?
Because the airplanes, if there was enemy aircraft flying over, they could see the lights from above. With the lights all off, they couldn't see it, and therefore they wouldn't have anything to bomb.
You had to do this every night, right?
Not every night. No.
Just
on certain nights. A lot of times they had a curfew.
The fact is what they do, the damage made their windows black, so no light can shine. end of World War II, going on to
you can talk about the end of World War II into the Korean War.
Oh, okay. Well, the war is over in 1945, and first we had victory in Europe, which was on the German front, and we had victory in Japan, which was on the invaded. Both times, the people all over the world, there was a song about what came on and all over the world, and everybody got up was dancing and rejoicing, and the war was finally over, and all our boys and girls, some of the daughters would come home. And at that time, I was about 7th grade. And for the next until the Korean War started, I believe it was 1950. I graduated in 51. I was in the 11th grade. And the only thing that we still had was that between the ages of, I think it was 24 and 25, services, mostly Marines and Army. And the only thing we had was a couple of homes. We got out of high school, and Russians had a college in Florida. And in 1990, Russians had a certain grade average. And I graduated in 1951. I was a grandmother at the time, and we got engaged in 1950. And I was drafted into the Army in 1953, on April the 9th, 1953. So that would be this year, April 9th, that would be 52 years ago. And we all had been involved in that, and had been to look forward to. Fortunately for me, the Korean War ended just as I was finishing up this training, which was important in August of 1953. And your grandmother and I was out in Fort Lewis, Washington. That's where I had my basic training. And in July of that year, July 3rd, my grandmother died. My mother and her mother rolled out Fort Lewis, Washington, and Grandma and I married in an Army chaplain, Mother Army chaplain. His name was Chaplain Hines. He was a captain in the Army. And we had, this is on a Friday, and I had to report back to their merits on Sunday. And I see Grandma again, and I think it was November, and I had to put a day for a whole church to the mission. And I didn't see her again until February of 1954. And at that time, my number was up, and I had to be 4 years, and I had a choice. The company clerk was a friend of mine, and I either had to send you to Japan or Europe. He says, if you send go to Japan, you're going to be right here. However, if you go to Europe, you'll get a 15-day furlough. You'll leave by June 3rd, going overseas to Germany. So naturally, I went to Grandma, and we were so pretty wet. And I took the furlough and came back to Michigan. And about 2 days together, and I went on, and I went on to Camp Kilmer, New Jersey. And Camp Kilmer was named after a soldier in the World War I by the name of Judge Kilmer. And he wrote the poem, but I shall never see a poem of the Massachusetts International Dolphin poem. And from there, I went to the carrier. This was in February of 1954.
I told him,
hard drive in 4 to 6 weeks. And I said, that's pretty difficult. He thought, I didn't know if you were ready to realize we didn't have any driving experience at all. So from then on, I went to the mountain a little more, but the guy which had some driving experience, and we'll take the teaching from there. That was one experience that we had when I was over there. And as I say, I made a sergeant and came home a sergeant. This was in March of 1935. And I was discharged out of Camp Sheridan, Illinois. I had to go ahead and prepare for these minutes. What else?
Talk about what it was like
to
leave that
little from here. Well, when I got home from Europe, my mother and I, just like being married all over again, we had to see each other for over a year. But every day that I was over in Germany, in fact, every day that we were married, she would write me a letter. Or part of the letter. She may not get the whole thing in the mail, but she would write something. And they mailed it out to Germany. And then, 2 or 3 times a week, or every other day. And so, when I got home, I was starting all over. I lived in an apartment, 63, East Front Street, which is torn down now, and it's now the main fire department. Where the fire department is in the home. And then we moved. I was working, when I first got out of service, I worked for the old school factory. That lasted about 3 months. And it was a very monotonous job, and I had a chance to get into Detroit Industry Company. So I wound up in there as a quick dispatcher. When I got back to a house in Washington, I was on the plane, the first plane, which in the city of Memphis, But anyway, I worked for the Edison company in the insurance business. I was an agent for State Farm Insurance. And I stayed with them for about 4 years. And your dad, he was born in 1950. But after the State Farm, that you know, since you grew up in 24 to 30 Northwest River, on my grandma and I did.
There at that time, and needless to say, I forget what day of the week it was on, but the next day, the commander hauled me into his office, and I really got reamed out at that particular time, and I tried to explain to him that, you know, 5 days you want me to learn these guys how to drive, and tractor like this, trailer, and they haven't even been behind a wheel before in their life. And I said, these things are going to happen. Well, he had to admit I was right, but he didn't like it too much. Well, I guess that was the, I never did hear anything more about it. And I guess the military settled with the restaurant owner, so I guess that was the end of that instance. But, never forget the imp. He just looked at me and shook his stick at me as belly club, and he says, get that damn thing out of here, you know, before anything else happens. So that's what we did.
Okay, how was Monroe as a county when you came back from the Korean War? Was everything up in?
Yeah, yes. During the Korean War, Monroe wasn't affected at all. There was no rationing during the Korean War. I don't recall any anyway. And basically life went on normally, like it did before the Korean War. Old things were happening. People had television sets. Color television was coming in pretty well, I would say in the late 50s, early 60s. And before then, of course, it was just black and white. And, of course, we don't have the big screens then. We only had, if you had a 12-inch screen, 12-inch, not a 13, but a 12-inch screen, you were considered lucky. That was a big screen. A lot of people only had six or 8-inch screens. That was it. And those television sets with six and 8-inch screens were bigger than the television sets you got right there, as far as the cabinets. And the cabinets were all wood cabinets and everything. You had more dials and knobs to turn on them to get them in, and everybody had an antenna on their house. And you had to turn the antenna to make the darn thing work, to get the signal in right. You turn it one way one night, another way the next one night. And, but basically, the economy was still growing, and everything went along okay.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.